Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show, folks. This is your host, Tony, and on the show today, I have Doug Riggs returning, and it's a pretty interesting discussion, which will have some information that I'm sure a lot of you won't be familiar with. I hope you will enjoy the show, and you can donate to help A Minute to Midnight. We do run it entirely by donations, and you can do that on our website, aminutetomidnight.com. I want to offer Doug Riggs a warm welcome back on the A Minute to Midnight show. Doug, I think this is about the third time maybe you've been on now, and after we were on air last time, we were talking off air, and I said, oh man, we've got to talk about this subject, and today is the day we're going to do it. So welcome, Doug, and perhaps you could introduce what that subject was.
Well, thank you, Tony, for having me back. At the end of the last program, I just happened to mention that we have discovered in the last couple of years that Hitler escaped, and the official storyline is that he and Eva Braun committed suicide in a bunker. In fact, they've had recently Fox News has put out DNA evidence that Hitler committed suicide, and there is no DNA evidence. I mean, so it's interesting that this is coming forward again and being put out there. I have posted on my SRADID page documentation from Harry Cooper. He's the foremost expert in this area. He wrote a book titled Hitler in Argentina. He revised it three or four times. The Documented Truth of Hitler's Escape from Berlin. That's listed on our SRADID page. I have a friend, Doug Woodward. He put together a series of messages and sort of resources that would be the narrative source that documents Hitler's escape. Hitler's escape, Ron T. Hanzik, he thought that was okay. Jerome Corsi is probably the most recent. He's a Harvard graduate. I think he got his PhD in political science. His most recent book, which came out, I think it's 2015 or so, Hunting Hitler, New Scientific Evidence that Hitler Escaped Nazi Germany. Dr. Jerome Corsi is a six-time New York Times best-selling author of Unfit for Command and The Abomination. And one of the sources that I have actual videos of interviews by Gerard Williams and Simon Dunstan. It's titled Grey Wolf. I think that was one of Hitler's code names, The Escape of Adolf Hitler. So these are all books. There are others, but these are really the primary sources. And the primary source I use on my website is Harry Cooper, who has researched this for many, many years. So that's kind of the background. The question is, why would they want to cover it up?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. A couple of years or a year or two ago, it would be now, I came across, you know, some declassified FBI documents that let out, and there were some there from the 1940s and Edgar Hoover's signature on the bottom, and there was a lot of talk then about we think Hitler is in South America and so on, and yet, of course, that all disappeared, so...
Yeah, in fact, I think I have a link somewhere. It quotes Eisenhower and Stalin and Truman and all the contemporaries after his alleged suicide, and none of them believed. In fact, they all said there is no evidence that Hitler died. They all said that back then. So they're coming up with suddenly evidence. I think it's interesting that narrative would be brought back in, especially when we're doing global exposing of the Hitler connection as it relates to SRADID. And so that is something that we came across for many years as we worked with survivors of trauma-based mind control. Whenever we came across Dr. Josef Mengele, and there's scores and scores that were programmed at Dr. Mengele before he was actually sacrificed, the lead story is he drowned in Brazil, but he died in 1979. And people had all this history with Mengele, And then when we discovered that Hitler did not die until 1962, this is actually survivors reported when he was willingly offered himself as a sacrifice. That's what the survivors say. And they said it was 1962. So I was interviewing Harry Cooper, who wrote the book Hitler in Argentina, The Documented Truth of Hitler's Escape from Berlin. I said, Harry, I said, when did he die? He said, 1962. And he's never talked to a survivor. So that's quite interesting. And when I listened to an interview with Jerome Corsi and the book that he wrote, Hunting Hitler, in the interview, Jerome Corsi married a woman from Argentina. Of course, he's made a lot of trips to Argentina because that's his wife's home. He says, if you ask the average American, how did Hitler die? They'll say he died in the bunker. If you ask the average person on the street in Argentina, how did Hitler die? They said, well, he died in Argentina. You know, they know, they all know. I mean, it's just the cultural, I think, orchestrated blackout in America, because America, under Operation Paperclip, they knew Hitler was alive. And Harry Cooper documents that FBI and other secret agents, they were able to document, and he received many manuscripts through the years of different individuals that actually saw Hitler in South America, and that the intelligence agencies, they were well aware of this.
Were there any actual photos of Adolf Hitler after 1945?
There's one or two in there. I think as I look him through his documentation, you can see him sitting there. Of course, Eva Braun lived through that whole period of time with him as well. I think the real connection for me is that in working with survivors, as they would mention Mengele, it was a couple of years ago, I said, well, you were with Mengele, where was Hitler? Because they begin to talk about, you know, events with Hitler. And I knew it was after 1945. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. I said, were you ever with Mengele with Hitler, without Hitler? And there was a pause. And one of our ladies, who was a biological daughter of Queen Elizabeth, who is also a breeder, she's fully integrated now, she said this, that he was always in the background channeling. So while Mengele was doing his trauma-based protocols, Hitler, as a channeler, was channeling the spirit of Apollyon, who's the destroyer, into the DID system. So if people know anything about occult activities and protocols, channeling and during trauma, they layer in all kinds of assignments as they split the identity and also layer in the powers of darkness. So anyone that's familiar with trauma-based mind control is aware of this. So we came to discover, and I think just to bring this to a pause here, that wherever Mengele was until Hitler's death, Hitler was always present. That's the report we now have.
So was it by a U-boat that they got to Argentina, Hitler and Eva Braun, is it, do you think?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's the, yeah, they've documented that he, they, I think they, he might have he escaped prior to the bunker incident was came forward a week or so before he was taken out. And they think somewhere possibly somewhere in the Netherlands, then got on a U-boat and arrived there sometime, I think, in June, if I remember right. I don't remember all the details, but he definitely escaped. I mean, it's not a theory. I mean, there is well-documented, corroborative testimonies and evidence that has been compiled that he definitely escaped Argentina and died there.
And as you say, in Argentina, it's fairly much common knowledge. And as I say, from memory, I don't have them in front of me, but those FBI released documents, you know, were saying we think we know where he is in the house and all that. They had blacked out the names of individuals and so on, but it would seem like that they were on Hitler's trail pretty early on in the piece, and yet nothing was done about it.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview by Gerard Williams, who wrote Grey Wolf, The Escape of Hitler. he interviewed at this, I forget the name of the motel or hotel down there, very famous for celebrities. Hitler, she remembers Hitler being there and waiting on him, and just a very casual conversation. She was told not to, if she wanted to keep her job, she would never mention that he was there or that, you know, she saw him there if she wanted to keep her job. So she didn't say anything at the time, but she has clear memories of this, the hotel whose ownership was helped finance the Nazi regime of World War II.
Hmm, that's very, very interesting. Okay, now why was Hitler, you know, kept alive and nothing done about it?
If you kind of go back to the ideology of Hitler, you know, his occult ideology, Heinrich Eckhart, I believe, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, the theosophist. There are a number of people who shaped his ideology, and I don't remember all of them now. There's a whole occult history on Hitler, but he believed that Germany was the kind of the template to bring forth a super race, the fifth root race, the Aryan, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, ideal humanity. And so in order to bring about that purified race, there was the Lebensborn Project, where they were trying to backbreed to to Nephilim, the Übermensch, the Superman. So they had that project going. But, of course, Mengele was trained in eugenics, and he knew the science and technology of eugenics. And so, of course, today eugenics has been repackaged as transhumanism. But they believed that the Germans had the right, and because of the blood, if they got to the right bloodline source, they could rule the world. So they had agents going into Tibet and doing research. And, of course, remember Helena Petrovna Blavatsky spent 7 years in Tibet before she moved to New York and established the Theosophical Society. So what he did in his, the way he was, his mindset worked, and those that were involved at the highest echelon in the occult practices, like Himmler and others, they believed that if they could just purify the blood, then the nation of Germany would reach the state where they could actually qualify to rule the world, as they referred to as the Third Reich. Well, through a lot of prayer and in England, the designed attack of the Third Reich on the UK, on the English people did not happen, and there was a prayer diversion. There were a number of people praying to send a deceiving spirit on him so that he would be diverted, and it did happen. And even against some of his top generals, he wanted to go after the mongrels, those that were in conflict with him as communists. He's a fascist, of course. They're communists, so they're the enemy. They're not fully human. They're mongrels. So they, in his mind, well, we could speed up the process of advancing the Nazi agenda by taking out the Soviet Union. And so they attacked, and it was a huge mistake. They did not have the resources, and of course that long winter and the final siege of Stalingrad, I mean, it was massive losses. So that was a huge blow to Hitler. You know, why did I lose? I mean, he has to think about this. What, you know, we're the superior race. How did we lose to these mongrels? So through the demonization of the leaders, and I think especially Hitler himself, he believed that the reason why they lost is that the land had not been purified of its unclean blood. And the primary scapegoat were not only the crippled and the, you know, those that are the homosexuals and those that had were handicapped, but the Jews were the primary problem. And if we just cleanse the land, we cleanse our blood of the Jewish problem, then we can attain our goal. So they ramped up. I mean, they really ramped up the Holocaust, the death camps, and the ovens the extermination of Jews after the loss of their campaign into Russia. And in coming towards the end of the war, there were the Confessing Church. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was one of them that was once somewhat of a pacifist, and of course he joined the Confessing Church. They believe that to save the nation, they're going to have to take out Hitler. I mean, he's a madman. He's taken us to destruction. So they agreed, these pastors, many of them were executed. In fact, Dietrich Bonhoeffer was martyred and executed about 5 weeks before the end of the war there in Germany. And so that was, he was a tremendous man, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And so, and you can read in some of the documentation that, well, he still lost the war, so who's he going to blame it on? Now, he was duplistic. He supposedly supported the church, but in reality, he knew that the church was an obstruction. So his final effort to get even would be to destroy the church. So if the Third Reich is going to survive and continue on, and it did, it became known as the Fourth Reich. In fact, there have been a number of books on this. Joseph Farrell, who is not a Christian, but he's a very well-known researcher, he wrote a book titled Nazi International, The Nazis' Post-War Plan to Control Finance, Conflict, Physics, and Space. And so he's also the author of The Reich of the Black Sun, The SS Brotherhood of the Bell, and Secrets of the Unified Field. So he's done a lot of writing on, you know, the whole Nazi era. And so the point is that the Third Reich did not die. It went underground, and it emerged in, 1952, 53, the first Bilderberg meeting, which was planned back in 1943, that Third Reich would go underground. It would emerge as an international banking cartel. And so through finance, they would continue on and take over the world gradually through controlling the financial system. And people say it's the Rothschilds. That's kind of ridiculous. A lot of these people are still Nazi in their orientation. The Rothschilds only play a relatively small part compared to these big players. So anyway, that's all history. But now going back with my work with survivors of satanic ritual abuse for 30 plus years. The last couple of years when working with survivors, you have to go through the layers of programming and internalized structuring. And what I mean by that is that Mengele, through trauma, was able to create compartmentalized identity. In other words, through trauma and death rituals, you could take a person's identity and compartmentalize it so that these compartmentalized aspects of a person's identity, called dissociative identity disorder, would be amnesic to the others. And so there would be certain codes and ways in which you could call out different aspects of a person's compartmentalized identity with walls of amnesia separating them. And it was all structured and done through trauma-based mind control and demonically enhanced. It's a very, very technical process, but it's well documented. So we found out that working through these different layers, I can't go into all the technicality of it, but I just got back from Hawaii and did my seventh seminar with Amanda Bays at Canaan Ministries. We've done three in Germany and three in South Africa, and this our seventh one was in Hawaii. And a church invited us to go there and speak and do training of their leadership on trauma-based mind control and the hybrid breeding program, of which they have some in their church that we've been working with. So a couple of years ago, we were burrowing down and getting into core, just the core, the original core identity before it was ever fragmented and compartmentalized. We got behind the three primaries, which is Dr. Tom Hawkins, who's a friend now with the Lord, and his work with SRADID. He talked about the three primaries. Well, I call them core shields. And you get behind that, this internalized layered structuring of a person's identity. I get down to the singularity, and the singularity amazingly, was Ava. It's an Ava domain. And so Ava was structured to be the wife of Hitler. So everyone I'm working with that is generational SRDID, they have an Ava domain, which is very hidden. The protection and the core person, the presenting person, doesn't want to have anything to do with this aspect of themselves because of what they've been involved with. So the programming and the conditioning around this core level identity as Ava is you are the wife of Hitler. So everyone that I've worked with is generational SRDID has a wife of Hitler named Ava. And sometimes Ava Marie would be a branch off of that. And created off of that Ava domain at age 12 is Semiramis. And Semiramis is the wife of Nimrod, who we now know is going to be, the Antichrist will be here as Nimrod, Apollyon Alexander. This has all come from survivors through the years. So the bottom line is that when Hitler survived, his agenda is just like in his demon-possessed mindset, if you wipe out all the Jews, our Third Reich will succeed. Well, when it didn't, he couldn't blame the Jews. So who did he blame? The church. So working with Mengele and under the direct aegis of Satan, and remember, he had already offered a sacrifice that killed over 5 million of his own people, but what gave him power is the sacrifice of over 6 million Jews. So that blood guilt brought him to a level of initiation that he was able to receive a DNA download from Satan to bring forth the current Antichrist. But they needed wombs for this. And these bloodline, these women that were conditioned to conceive, were all templated and rituals to be able to conceive hybrids. And so they were conceiving hybrids as Hitler's children. So going back to the DID aspect, as I began to work with people, and in the last couple of years, not just began to work, I'd been working with some of them for several years, the deepest and most hidden aspect of their core identity was Ava. And so, you know, what is this? Is this the Ava Project? I recognize it's not. The generational SRDID that was launched and templated in 1944, and I really can't go into all the details, but it was really released at the birth of the nation Israel for reasons that should be obvious to those who understand eschatology. And the goal was to so infiltrate the church and to corrupt the church and weaken the church that it would be ineffective of thwarting the realization of the Fourth Reich, or as we know, the bringing in of the New World Order under Antichrist. Because for Hitler and those that were in that ilk, they didn't call him Antichrist. They call him, you know, he's the savior of mankind. He is going to be here to bring mankind the technology and the ability to evolve to Homo sapien 2.0, you know, Homo universalis, Homo noeticus, you know, the one new man of the agenda of people like Ray Kurzweil, you know, bringing in the transhumanist agenda. So all of this has a lot of implications, and not all of it is SRADID when it comes to do with transhumanism. But at the root, but at the core of this, the ultimate transhumanist, go back in history, that was Nimrod. He was born a man, but we know from Genesis 10, he became a Gibberim. That Gibberim, a mighty hunter, a mighty man, is the same term that is used to describe Nephilim in Genesis 6:4. He became that. So what was that? How did he do that? The Tower of Babel was like it was a stargate. It was what would be an equivalent today of CERN, which is, you know, it's the whole goal. And they don't tell you this, but if you look up Anthony Patch's work online, he documents this as a stargate. And it's designed to bring forth the DNA of the Antichrist. That DNA is already here. It's to replicate it. So through the CERN technology there's going to be able to replicate the already existing DNA of the Antichrist to create the image of the beast and the mark of the beast. So I've said a lot, and probably I'll pause here because you might have some thoughts or questions about what I've said thus far.
Well, yeah, firstly, I'd like to say, well, what about Mengele? Like, how did he end up in the picture? Was he based in South America? I know that there are people that, many that have claimed that he was in the United States, and I believe you've got information on that. So people may be interested to know how he came to be in the picture post-World War II.
Well, he escaped. They didn't. I mean, that's history. And then, the Mossad, when they were in South America and trying to arrest these various Nazis, they were going after Rudolf Eichmann. And they were on the trail of Eichmann and Mengele. This was in the early 60s. And they could have possibly captured Mengele with Eichmann, but they aborted the Mengele option because they would compromise them getting Eichmann out. So they opted to just take out Eichmann. And so Mengele was never captured. He died in 1979. Through the years of working with our survivors, they all talk about being programmed by Mengele, but not in South America, although that's where he was based. He moved around at different times. When authorities got hot on his trail, I think he went to Paraguay and at one time, and he went to different places. I think he ended up in Brazil at the end. But, the people I worked with, I mean, he had apartments here. He had an apartment in New York. He had a number of places where he was operating or carrying out his agenda under Hitler right here in America. He was protected. There were levels of, he was, where did the CIA mind control originate from? He's the mastermind behind this. So he had value. How can you create a secret agent without the secret agent knowing they're a secret agent? How could you create someone like that? Well, Mengele knew how to do that. All you have to have is a listing of people that have an incest history, and they were able to identify different families, and they knew how to do interviews to find out who's dissociated. And if they already have a dissociative history, then they could be called or pulled out and be programmed to be secret agents, and they don't even know it because they're DID. So this came from Mengele. So I have had reports through several decades of Mengele being right here in America. Now, some of them did talk about being with him there in South America with Hitler, but most of the reports that I have is that the trauma-based mind control was, if it wasn't here, it was at Tavistock Institute in the UK. That was a major programming center then. I don't know what it is now, but it was there. There were a number of programming centers like Babelsberg Castle in Germany where Himmler had his residence. There's a lot of rituals that have gone on there. Mengele was here in America, and anybody that has questions that they would have to question many cooperative testimonies of people who were programmed by him right here in America. And a lot of these facilities would be underground military bases. There'd be hospitals. There would be, places where they're secure. There's top security clearance. These would be ideal to be able to carry on this nefarious kind of work with impunity from the law enforcement.
Yeah, it's very interesting indeed to sort of realize that it went on, which implicates, of course, you say the CIA, but probably other government agencies and so on as well. What about Martin Bormann? What role did he play in all of this?
Yeah, I just was listening to the interview. Just going back to what you just commented on about Mengele, and I forgot what it was, maybe it'll come back to me, but after Hitler allegedly took his life, Martin Bormann actually took over. He was, according to Harry Cooper, was instrumental in getting Hitler out of Germany at the end of the war. And then after Hitler allegedly committed suicide, then Bormann, all documents and anything signed that used to be signed by Hitler was signed by Bormann, according to Harry Cooper. So, yeah, he was a very significant player for sure.
So what's really the end goal with the CIA and people with having used, SRA and so on in their programming? What's really the end goal that's being tried to attain through all of this?
Well, the CIA, they are separate. Now, they're not at the center of bringing in the New World Order. There are layers within the CIA. It's compartmentalized. For example, there's an inner circle of the CIA that absolutely they knew. I mean, they were part of the killing of Kennedy. Many of the work there would not know about it. So the CIA has an agenda, and that is to be able to infiltrate and overthrow governments and carry out the agenda that is contained within the CIA. It's like it has its own agenda. Depending on the particular layer you're working in. But behind that, I mean, the CIA stuff that I've worked with is all in the outer layers of a person's DID system. The ultimate agenda goes back to Hitler, and that is to bring in Übermensch, to bring in who we know as Antichrist. We know the Antichrist will not be fully human. Why? He's called a beast. And what is the other evidence that that the Antichrist and the false prophet will not be fully human? We know from Revelation 19:20, when Jesus returns, that he will throw the beast and the false prophet, the Antichrist and the false prophet, will be thrown into the lake of fire. They don't even stand before the great white throne judgment at the end of the thousand-year reign. So when you compare Revelation 19, verse 20, with Revelation 20, verse 10, we see at the end of the thousand-year reign of Christ, Satan is thrown into the lake of fire, where the beast and the false prophet are. They've been there 1,000 years. Then Revelation 20, 11 through 15, what comes next? All the dead in history that haven't put their faith in Jesus Christ and whatever that revelation was before Christ came, that denied the knowledge of God that God gave them, Romans 1, 18, they'll stand before the great white throne judgment, be judged according to their works. So going back to the ultimate agenda, is to bring in a hybrid Christ, because according to the New Agers, man needs to evolve to his next level of evolutionary development. And if you look at the transhumanist movement, they believe that we can now be in control of the evolutionary process, through nanotechnology and cybernetics and artificial intelligence and other disciplines. The goal is to replace this dying, inferior species and to bring in a humanity that doesn't need God, doesn't need a resurrection body. The whole transhumanist movement says we will be our own God. We will become, we will develop the technology to advance and to evolve into a whole new humanity. That was the goal of Adolf Hitler. In fact, if you give me a moment here, I'll pull this up and read it to you. It's a statement that Hitler made, and I have to pull it up here for a moment. But Hitler was, the fact that he lived on, it was to carry on the agenda that failed because the Allies defeated Nazi Germany, so it went underground. And a big part of that underground is the SRA-DID infiltrating the body and bride of Christ and to weaken the church, because he saw that that was clearly an opposition to realizing his goal. And so, yeah, it's pretty amazing when you think about just how Satan inspired him to do this. This is quoting Adolf Hitler. "It is my ultimate aim to perform an act of creation, a divine operation, the goal of a biological mutation which will result in an unprecedented exaltation of the human race and the appearance of a new race of heroes, demigods, godmen. So he goes on to say, my party comrades have no conception of the dreams that haunt my mind or of the grandiose edifice of which the foundations at least will have been laid before I die. And so there we see the machinations of this monster. And then I think he concludes by saying the world has reached a turning point and will undergo an upheaval which the uninitiated cannot understand, Adolf Hitler. So that was his goal. His goal was not just to create a Third Reich, but to create a race of godmen, like you said. So what's the ultimate goal? Well, who's going to be the counterfeit of Jesus Christ, Antichrist? Well, what does Antichrist mean? Antichristus means a substitute for Christ. He's going to come on the world scene as the Savior. He will be in the belief that's already set up and that's already in our mindset, evolution. He will be the final evolutionary representation of the goal of the transhumanist movement, and that is, you will not die, you'll live forever, you shall be as gods. That goes back to Genesis 3, 4 and 5, when Satan said, you will not die, you shall be as Elohim, gods. So that's the ultimate goal, to bring in a race of hybrids.
It's certainly a distorted one, that's for sure. Now, I just want to go back a little bit. You mentioned something about the Queen's biological daughter earlier, and I think that's kind of a big call. Is there evidence like DNA or anything to back up this person's claim?
Well, I would put it this way. People, who's going to go get the DNA of the Queen, okay? Do we have multiple testimonies? I've worked with four people that the eggs of Queen Elizabeth have been created offspring. Same with King George VI. They're not public. They're never supposed to be public. When I was in South Africa in 2012, I met two or three people who stated that their biological mother was Queen Elizabeth. The one that's here in our assembly, if you look at her, she has the physiognomy of Queen Elizabeth. Her sister in South Africa, she has the physiognomy of Queen Elizabeth. So, that's not a DNA evidence. They have a history with her. I mean, when we talk about the royal family, these are all cult-active people, Tony. I mean, this is well known by people all over Europe. People are working with SRIDID, know very well that Prince Philip, who was one of the primary handlers and trainers of the little girls that were being groomed to be cult prostitutes, Prince Philip was a handler and a groomer for that. This has come from multiple witnesses. So when people talk about where's the DNA evidence, my Bible tells me in 2 Corinthians 13:1, let every fact be established on the basis of two or three witnesses. Well, I've got way more than two or three witnesses that corroborate this reality, not only the royal bloodline the bloodline of King George VI, the bloodline of Hitler, which has been spliced in with the technology that Mengele had. All of this is a part of the end game to bring in Antichrist. So if people believe that Antichrist is coming, who is he? How does he become a substitute for Christ? I mean, Christ is resurrected. So that means his current state is superior to who we are now. So if Antichrist comes on the scene, he's going to have to come off with a kind of deception where people are going to say, wow, I mean, this is the ultimate specimen. This is the quintessential man. How can we become like him? Well, I'm glad you asked. I happen to have the DNA upgrade. You take this DNA upgrade and you shall become like me, and you shall live forever and you shall be as God. So, it makes sense when you understand the satanic mindset to displace Christ and to completely wipe out the human race. Remember what it says in Matthew 24. It says that if the time of the tribulation leading up to the second coming of Jesus, if those days had not been shortened, no flesh would survive. Well, is that because of war? No, it says at the end, there's a massive gathering together to attack Jesus Christ in Revelation 19, 19. The threat of wiping out mankind is not war. It's he will cease to be man. That was the whole threat in Genesis 6. The whole attack was to wipe out the human gene pool so that Christ couldn't come. They would be just hybrids. We know from Genesis 6, 9, it says that Noah was perfect in his generations. The word perfect doesn't mean he was sinless. It means he was genetically pure, tamim. It's the same word used for an unblemished sacrifice. So for the Antichrist to come on the scene, there is an agenda, and that is to replace mankind. And when you take the mark of the beast, you will cease to be human. You look at the book of Revelation, anyone that takes the mark of the beast is damned. They're not savable. So lest those days be shortened, no flesh should be saved. Why? Because the same goal that was in operation in Genesis 6 is going to be at the end. Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah, so it shall be at the return of the Son of Man. The same goal is to wipe out the entire human race and replace it with a hybrid race. That's the satanic agenda.
Yeah, I tell you what comes to my mind at the moment as you were talking too is the fact that the head of British Freemasonry is, I think, the first cousin to Queen Elizabeth. So you have a royal that's actually the head and has been the longest standing head of Freemasonry ever. So the royals are right up there, and Freemasonry, of course, is a complete distortion of Christianity, which I'm going to do a video about this sometime soon, but... Yeah.
Well, the primogeniture of Freemasonry can be traced back to Nimrod.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's significant that the head is in Britain is actually a royal. So.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. They had a big tricentenary celebration in 2017, and he was there and was honoured in it, and it's quite an eye opener. That whole thing is like 2 hour long show in Royal Albert Hall, and I'm going to do something on it anyway. But it's a bit of an eye opener, and you realise just it's quite plainly there for anyone that has eyes to see that Freemasonry is a complete topsy turvy of true Christianity, and it's all there, really. Yeah. So yeah. It's all sort of pretty interesting stuff. Have you got any other thoughts that you would like to go down with this?
Yeah, I think in Revelation 17, you know, it talks about the mystery Babylon, the mother of all harlots. That means, to go back to Babylon, the mother of all false religions, because all false religions are considered, you know, in the Old Testament, if you go after other gods, you're prostituting yourself. You're being a harlot. So all false religions can be traced back to Babylon. And we see in Revelation 17, 6, I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. When I saw her, I wondered greatly, and the angel said to me, to John, why do you wonder? I shall tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has 7 heads and 10 horns. So, you know, people understand eschatology. The 7 heads, we have to look at this in the context of God's covenant people. The first anti-Semitic kingdom was Egypt. But Egypt and the religious system of Egypt originated from Babylon. So, first of all, the template is Babylon here. But when we look at these 7 heads, the first head created, the first harlot was Egypt. And, of course, the 10 horns, that is the final configuration of the revived Roman Empire. The 10 horns can be understood by looking at the 10 toes in Daniel 2 and the 10 horns of Daniel 7. So who are the 7 heads? Well, the first one, the first harlot offspring of the Babylonian kingdom under Nimrod and Semiramis was Egypt. And Egypt is the first nation that was holding the Abrahamic seed, the seed of the serpent, in captivity. They were in bondage, in slavery. So the first head would be Egypt. The second one would be Assyria. The third head would be Babylon. And of course, in Daniel 7, it picks up there with Babylon. So you only have Babylon, then you have Medo-Persia, and you have Greece, and then you have Rome, and then the Ten Horns revived Rome. Okay, so if we look at these seven heads, first is Egypt, second is Assyria, third is Babylon, fourth is Media Persia, they conquered Babylon, and fifth is the Grecian Empire, the Seleucids, under Alexander the Great, and then that's five, and then six is Rome. But who is seven? Because seven and the ten horns represents the final configuration. We know that from studying Daniel 2, Daniel 10, and the book of Revelation. So let's read on. Verse 8, the beast that you saw was and is not. So who is that? That goes back to Nimrod. We'll notice that in a moment. And is about to come up out of the abyss. So when Nimrod died, something happened. When he built the Tower of Babel, he was transmuted. And he became a gibbering. That's found in, what is it, Genesis 10, verse 8 or so. He became a gibbering. So he got a, Satan transformed him. So when he died, he didn't go into Hades or Sheol. He went into the abyss. That's like, that's an equivalency of Tartarus. Why? Because he was no longer fully human. That's where the rebellious angels and 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5, verse 4, they sin. They go there. So he comes out of the abyss, equivalent to Tartarus, the prison house for the rebellious angels, Genesis 6. But he was the first hybrid. He's the first transhumanist, and he goes into destruction. And those who dwell on the earth will wonder, whose name has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that he was. That beast goes back to Nimrod, and he is not, that's in John's day, under the sixth head, six, he was not in John's day, that would be Domitian, somewhere around 90 and 96 AD, and he will come. He will come. Okay, so here is a mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains. These are kingdoms. We know from Daniel 2, these mountains represent kingdoms on which the woman sits. So this Babylonian system is prevailed throughout history through various names. You know, the Queen of Heaven would be Isis in Egypt. It would be Diana and the Roman pantheon, Artemis and the Greek pantheon, Ashtoreth and the Canaanite pantheon. It's all the same guys, okay? So we see the seven heads are the seven mountains on which the woman sits, verse 10, and they are seven kings. Five have fallen. So first king that fell, that goes back to Egypt, the first pharaoh. He fell, is succeeded by, you know, the king of Assyria, then followed by the king of Babylon, followed by the king of Media Persia, followed by the king of Greece, and then the sixth, that would be the current Roman Empire in John's day. Five have fallen, one is, that's in John's day. And, you know, they persecuted the church. They sought to wipe out the Jews. I think it was under Emperor Hadrian, and was it 135 or so? He wanted to wipe out the entire Jewish nation, even the name of Israel, and he called that piece of property Palestine. So he was definitely a anti-Semitic king, as well as one of the authority that persecuted Christians to the death during the time of the early church. So notice, as we're reading on here, it says, one is fallen, one is, that would be number six. The other has not yet come. He's the seventh. So in John's day, the seventh, whoever that is, he hasn't come yet. Now, when he comes, he's not Nimrod. We're going to see. Nimrod is the king of the ancient king of Babylon. He comes out of the abyss. So this one right here is not him. We notice he has not yet come in John's day. When he comes, he must remain for a little while. I submit to those listeners, Hitler lasted 12 years. This is talking about Hitler. And how do we know? And the beast which was and is not is himself also an eighth. He's not the seventh. He's a hybrid. and he's one of the seven. So the connection between Hitler and bringing in Antichrist is right here in the Word of God. Hitler was the last human king, the last human Antichrist. He is the bridge and the one who prepared for the beast, the hybrid Christ, who in this passage is the eighth. And eighth is a number of resurrection. There's all these rituals that are talking about the resurrection of Nimrod in the occult symbology, the phoenix, the rising of the phoenix. So notice, he's one of the seven, and he goes to destruction. And the ten horns, which you saw, are ten kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but they receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour. And he goes on more. So that's quite amazing that we can go right to this passage, and if you want to, you know, look at, well, who's the seventh king? He's not a hybrid, and neither were the previous six. So Hitler is the only one that fits the parameters of who this seventh king is, and I think that's very significant.
That's very interesting. So where are people able to find you online?
Well, DougRiggs.org. We have our website. You know, we have the SRADID page where we have the Hitler documentation on there and working with survivors. We have the Bike Show page, which are a number of recordings which I gave several years ago to help believers understand from the Bible where we are in history, how to be prepared for these last days. Our ministry page is what we post our assembly meetings on a weekly basis. I have an interview page where I've done past interviews through the years, many, many interviews. The last two I've done with you are on the interview page. I have a counseling page for people that are seeking counseling. There's resources there, Deeper Walk International, and Deeper Walk International, and et cetera like that. So we put the page together to try to help people that are interested in what we're doing, and we just trust the Lord that, you know, however he would use this, it would ultimately prepare the believers to be ready for the Lord and for the bride. Jesus hasn't come back. I would just say this. My last four messages before I went to Hawaii is, what is God waiting for? And so our last four messages that we did is to look at the scripture, what is God waiting for? And the answer is us. He's not going to come back till the bride has made herself ready, Revelation 19:7-8. So what is that? Revelation 19:7-8. What does it mean for the bride to make herself ready? So the whole ministry page and the Bite Show page was designed to help believers understand what is God's agenda for these last days, and how can we as believers intelligently cooperate with the Lord to see this age consummated and for him to return.
Well, thank you. It's certainly been a fascinating interview, Doug, and a lot of food for thought, probably one of those ones to listen to a couple of times to really get all of it to sink in. So thank you heaps for being on the A Minute to Midnight show again today. It's been a pleasure having you.
Yes, well, thank you, Tony. It's my privilege, and Lord's blessing, grace, and protection be upon all your listeners and yourself as well, in Jesus' name.
Amen, and thank you so much for that. Folks, we'd appreciate it if you'd like this video and maybe share it, and also subscribe to our YouTube channel, our iTunes channel, and visit our website, aminutetomidnight.com. And we do run A Minute to Midnight 100% by donations, and I want to thank the people that help us, because we couldn't do this without your help. And you can donate at aminutetomidnight.com as well. And all the music used in the shows is written, played, and recorded by me, and if you want to download any of it for free, you can do that on our website as well. That's about it for today's show. We will catch you with another episode of A Minute to Midnight in a few days' time. Until then, God bless and have a great week.